This is Monday, August 21st, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Ira Melman in Washington. Coming up, the chief of U.S. Naval Operations is starting an investigation into yet another collision between a Navy ship and a much larger tanker. It is supported by the Defense Secretary.
He has put together a broader inquiry to look into these incidents and to determine any of the causal factors.
Also ahead, the sun is about to be fully blocked by the moon in the western United States, and the U.S. president will reveal his plans tonight on how to deal with Afghanistan, all on today's International Edition. 10 American soldiers are reported missing, 5 injured after a U.S. Navy guided missile destroyer collided with a merchant ship east of Singapore. The USS John S. McCain sustained significant damage as a result of the incident near the Strait of Malacca. That according to a statement from the U.S. 7th Fleet Monday. Officials said the collision punctured a hole in the ship's hull below the waterline, causing several areas to flood, including a sleeping compartment for sailors, as well as some of the ship's communication rooms. The Singapore military evacuated 4 of the injured sailors by helicopter to a hospital in Singapore, where they're being treated for non-life-threatening injuries. The 5th sailor did not require any medical attention. The U.S. Chief of Naval Operations announced Monday an investigation into the mishaps. U.S. Defense Secretary Jim Mattis said the effort has his full support.
I also fully support the Chief of Naval Operations, Admiral John Richardson's efforts right now. He has put together a broader inquiry to look into these incidents and to determine any of the causal factors, to determine what's going on, both immediate contributors to this incident, but also any related factors. And once we have those facts, we'll share them with you.
VOA National Security Correspondent Jeff Selden joins us now from the Pentagon. Jeff, the Navy has come up with an announcement following the news, and it's, I don't know the last time anything like this has happened. Tell us about it.
Well, the Chief of Naval Operations, Admiral John Richardson, announced earlier today that they've directed for an immediate operational pause for all U.S. fleets worldwide as they take a look at what's going on. He talked about in his statement what he described as really a trend where it's not just this collision or the collision about a month ago with the McCain sister ship, the USS Fitzgerald, in which 7 sailors were killed, but there have been some other incidents. He called it a series of incidents in the Pacific theater. And he says that this demands more forceful action. So what they're going to be doing, in addition to pausing everything right now and assessing what's been happening and if they can find any of the immediate causes, things that they can do right now to make sure this type of thing doesn't happen again, they've also opened what's been described as a much broader inquiry where they're going to be looking at training, what they call operational tempo or the pace of naval operations in the Pacific and worldwide, material, mechanics, the maintenance of these ships to figure out why all of a sudden in the last several months they've had more of these incidents and lives of U.S. sailors have been at risk and in some cases that they've been lost.
Well, we should say that the collision is the second involving a ship from the Navy's 7th Fleet in the Pacific in the past 2 months. 7 sailors died in June when the USS Fitzgerald and a container ship hit each other in waters off Japan. There have been some other incidents to which you alluded. How much concern do you hear over the walking in the hallways in the Pentagon over this recent series of similar incidents?
Obviously, there's substantial concern. Remember, this comes at a time when the pace of operations, especially in the Pacific, has picked up substantially, especially since President Trump took office. There have been more of what the U.S. calls freedom of navigation operations in areas of the South China Sea, areas where the U.S. is sailing ships. They're allowed to make the point that there should be free navigation there, something that has upset China. So there are more ships in motion. And there are more ships in motion in busy areas. The area near Singapore, the Straits of Malacca, where this most recent collision took place, is a busy area. It's transversed by many, many ships, many shipping companies. It's a major shipping lane. So there's a lot of activity. And if you're going to have more U.S. ships in the area, active in the area, they want to make sure that the sailors aren't in danger, that the ships aren't in danger, that other commercial vessels are not in danger, and that all this activity takes place safely. The last thing that any military wants to do is all of a sudden say, look, stop everything. Let's figure out what's going on when there are ongoing crises. Remember, it's not just the concern in the Pacific isn't just freedom of navigation and some of these issues with China, but there's also tremendous concern about North Korea, the nuclear threat there. So there are ships that have to be active because of that. So this is something that the Navy, the U.S. Navy, wants to resolve as quickly as possible. But given the trend, there's a lot that they have to look at. And so one of the things they've done, they're already sending the commander of the U.S. Pacific Fleet to Singapore to take charge of this immediate the immediate concern and the efforts surrounding the USS John S. McCain. But there's also this bigger investigation now, this broader investigation into what exactly is going on that has caused this these series of incidents that are indeed alarming.
Well, let's get back to the McCain incident. There are 10 sailors who remain missing. What's the latest as far as the search for them is concerned?
The search is ongoing. The U.S. has its has an amphibious ship that's in the area that is the USS America, which is contributing helicopters to the search. The Navy of Singapore, the Malaysian Navy, also helping with the search right now. And as the last update we've had from the U.S. Navy is the search is ongoing, and that more updates will be coming as they're made available. But as of yet, no word on what has happened to the 10 sailors that are unaccounted for at the moment.
VOA's national security correspondent Jeff Selden joining us live from the Pentagon. Jeff, thanks so much.
Anytime.
Well, let's shift now to the sun disappearing. That's what's going on. Started on the West Coast. Millions of people have traveled a long way, and they're looking through very strange glasses, awaiting the start, which has now started, of a rare total solar eclipse. The moon is covering the sun from the Pacific to the Atlantic for the first time in 99 years. An estimated 200 million people live within a day's drive of today's path of totality, which is now starting on Oregon's Pacific coast and moving across the U.S. heartland all the way to South Carolina's Atlantic coast. Cities, towns, and parks across the path have been prepared for an influx of people with telescopes, cameras, protective glasses to watch what NASA said it expects to be the most watched and documented eclipse in history. VOA social media guru Andrew Palshevsky joins us now. I take it some people are talking about that online.
And I think that's one of the reasons, Ira, why that's going to be the most documented ever is because of social media. Obviously, 99 years ago, we didn't have Twitter and Facebook and Instagram and all these kind of things. So we're seeing wall-to-wall coverage across social media, Facebook Live, Twitter, from NASA, from news organizations, even amateurs just taking videos and posting them live. So no matter where you are in the world, thanks to social media, you can actually view this on your phone or your computer. And that's actually causing a bit of an issue here in the United States. There's some misinformation spreading around social media about whether you can use things like your cell phone camera to view the eclipse, if it's safe to kind of take an over-the-shoulder selfie to view it.
You want to burn up your camera, go ahead. Yeah.
Well, that's exactly the issue. Those cameras are not set to be exposed to the sun like that. So if you do want to burn up your camera, or worse, your eyes, you can go ahead and do that. But lots of questions about safety swirling around social media. Thankfully, there are agencies like NASA, the U.S. Space Agency, that are taking to social media and trying to get the word out about what to do and not do to safely see the eclipse. But there is just a general sense of excitement, Ira, around this. Jokes, fun, people posting pictures of two packages of eclipse gum pasted to some glasses and saying, these are my eclipse glasses. And I think if there's anyone that's excited about this eclipse, it's got to be Bonnie Tyler. Of course, her hit from the 80s, Total Eclipse of the Heart, getting a lot of new airplay and a lot of, I've heard that song probably four or five times already today.
I look forward again. I couldn't find it.
But just a lot of excitement on social media.
And hashtag, she's singing on a cruise ship.
She is singing on a cruise ship in the middle of the total solar eclipse. As soon as there's totality, she's going to sing a shortened version of her song during that period of totality. So
she's singing it in
cool.
The dark, of course. Yep.
Yeah.
Andrew, thank you. Andrew Palshevsky with social media here on International Edition. Among the top stories in the world, the U.S. Navy has ordered a broad investigation into naval operations after a guided missile destroyer collided with a merchant ship east of Singapore early this morning. U.S. President Trump will outline the United States' path forward in Afghanistan in a speech Monday night. Police in Spain have shot and killed a man wearing a suicide belt in a town west of Barcelona. Amid the hunt for the perpetrator of Thursday's deadly van attack, they're now saying they got the guy. And the United States will halt the issuing of all non-immigrant visas from Russia from Wednesday to September 1st. That according to the U.S. Embassy in Moscow. Expanded coverage of these stories and more on the VOAnews.com website and all of our social media platforms. This is VOA. We continue now with International Edition. After a months-long review of U.S. strategy, President Trump will address the American people from Fort Myer, Virginia, outside Washington tonight on the way forward in Afghanistan, 16 years after the U.S. intervened to defeat the Taliban regime following the 9/11 terrorist attacks in 2001. Reports indicate the possibility Afghanistan's mineral wealth could be used to help pay for the conflict and reconstruction efforts. Senator Ben Cardin, the ranking Democratic member of the Senate Foreign Relations Committee, appearing on the Fox News Sunday program, was asked what U.S. policy in Afghanistan should be.
We have invested a great deal in Afghanistan. Our objective needs to be that we have a regime in Afghanistan that can maintain some semblance of security so that we don't see growing terrorist organizations again within Afghanistan. That's our objective. Should we use private contract troops? Absolutely not. There's no accountability there. That's not the purpose for private contractors. No, we should not do that. Should we put more military in? Again, this is not the U.S. fight. I don't believe putting more American soldiers in Afghanistan is the answer.
Now, the White House has said in a statement the president will provide an update on the path forward for America's engagement in Afghanistan and South Asia. That is important, said Wilson Center Deputy Asia Program Director and South Asia Senior Associate Michael Kugelman, who told VOA's Victor Beatty that U.S. policy toward Pakistan is also important.
And that's wise, as I say, because it's very hard to consider ways forward in Afghanistan without looking at the very connected case of Pakistan, which is a bordering country of Afghanistan and also happens to play a key role in the war in Afghanistan because, among other things, leaders of the Taliban insurgency have used Pakistan as a sanctuary.
Do you have any idea what the president might offer, whether to pull out entirely or to send in more troops?
My own gut feeling is that even after a very long, really 8 months strategy review period, I imagine that the president will come out with a policy that will be very similar to what has been used by the Obama administration, which entails maintaining a modest U.S. military presence in Afghanistan, though I imagine that could entail sending several thousand more troops to enhance the current U.S. training mission of the Afghan security forces. With Trump, there could be a few surprises mixed in there as well. I imagine that there could be a plan to, for instance, look into ways to invest in the mineral reserves in Afghanistan. That's been something that had been suggested as a possible area for the Trump administration to look at. But bottom line, I really do think that his policy will not have many surprises. I do not think it will have any outside-the-box thinking. I do not think it will involve the use of mercenaries or contractors. Ironically enough, it's going to look a lot like what the Obama administration had in effect, with some changes around the edges.
Michael, the top U.S. commander in Afghanistan, General John Nicholson, perhaps gave us a little bit of a hint. On Sunday, he hailed the launch of the Afghan Army's new Special Operations Corps. He declared that, quote, we are with you and we will stay with you.
Well, absolutely. And I think this is one of the major arguments for why the U.S. should maintain a military presence in Afghanistan. And that's because there has been significant progress with training the Afghan security forces, and particularly the special forces, who are very well trained, they're very efficient, they don't suffer from the same morale problems that the broader security forces do. And the U.S. has really worried that the special forces, who number only about 12,000, are getting exhausted and overextended because they're being used in contexts where they shouldn't be used because the rest of the security forces don't do a good job. So I think that one could argue that by maintaining the U.S. training mission and perhaps expanding it by including several thousand more U.S. troops, you could then be in a position to increase the number of Afghan special forces, which would be a boon, certainly on the battlefield, but across the board, it would be a good thing for Afghan security forces.
Michael Kugelman, however, describes the security situation as alarming, given that the Afghan government controls less than two-thirds of the country, while the Taliban holds more territory than at any time since 2001. A reminder, VOA will have complete coverage of the president's speech at 0100 hours on Tuesday. The U.S. and South Korea have begun 10 days of large-scale joint military exercises, but a reduced number of troops and assets will participate this year. VOA's Brian Patton in Seoul reports that while the military stresses these defensive drills are needed to maintain operational readiness, there are concerns they could again provoke tension with North Korea.
The Ulchi Freedom Guardian exercises that occur every summer are a massive military planning and coordination operation about how to respond to computer-simulated North Korean attack scenarios. Some 17,500 American troops will participate, down from 25,000 last year, along with 50,000 South Koreans. These annual war games, in addition to the combined ground, air, and naval field exercises that occur in the spring, are needed, say military leaders, to train the constant influx of new soldiers being deployed in the field. But this year's exercises come just as North Korean leader Kim Jong-un actually de-escalated tensions by putting on hold a plan to fire missiles towards waters near the U.S. territory of Guam. The move averted a possible conflict after President Donald Trump warned that the U.S. military was locked and loaded and would respond to any attack with fire and fury. Some political analysts suggest Washington has responded to Pyongyang's recent restraint by downsizing this year's exercises, sending less personnel, and holding back nuclear-capable bombers and other strategic assets. North Korea, however, said Sunday that the military exercises would add fuel to the fire, increasing the likelihood that Pyongyang will conduct further missile and nuclear tests in the future. On Sunday, Defense Secretary Jim Mattis denied that North Korea's objections factored into the reduced number of troops and assets in this year's games.
This is an exercise for the defense of Korea. It's a combined exercise, and it's all worked out way in advance by the alliance.
North Korea has long objected to the U.S.-South Korea joint military exercises that they have called rehearsals for invasion. China and Russia have also called for the suspension of the joint military drills, along with a freeze on North Korean missile and nuclear tests. Brian Patton, VOA News, Seoul.
This is VOA.
When news breaks, VOA Africa is there, bringing you news as it happens. Listen to Africa News Tonight, Monday through Friday at 1600 and 1800 UTC. And our five-minute newscasts come to you at the top of each hour. VOA Africa, your trusted source of information.
VOA's Learning English is available online at learningenglish.voanews.com. Check out our programs such as Let's Learn English, English in a Minute, Everyday Grammar, and many more. VOA's Learning English, your reliable source for learning English.
This is VOA's International Edition. The world's worst-smelling flower has bloomed at the U.S. Botanic Garden in Washington, just across the street, down the street from our studios. The stench of this corpse flower is often compared to the odor of rotting flesh or garbage. Each giant plant grows one large flower that only lasts up to a couple of days. VOA's Deborah Block went to the Botanic Garden to find out what the smell was all about.
It is hard to believe that something so intriguing could smell so bad.
Actually, quite beautiful, but smells horrible.
It's a really stink.
The flower sends out the stench at pulsating intervals. The interior temperature of the flower reaches 46 Celsius, with heat that helps spread the smell.
The plant right now is emitting a fire hose of odor. Wait. And it's just filling the space and really smelling. If you get up into that flow, you really need a gas mask.
And the reason behind the stench?
It's all about its pollinators. Its pollinators are carrion beetles and flies, and they are attracted to rotting meat as their food source. So that's why the plant is trying to imitate that smell to bring them in.
The rare plant native to the tropical rainforest of Sumatra, Indonesia, can grow more than 3.5 meters high and live for 40 years. The corpse flower does not bloom often, and in fact, this 5-year-old plant is blossoming for the first time, which fascinated this 8-year-old boy who had done some research in advance.
I know it stinks badly, but I didn't know how much it stung.
This plant is the world's largest unbranched inflorescence, or a cluster of multiple flowers that looks like a single one. The U.S. Botanic Garden has over a dozen corpse flowers plants. Soon, 2 more of the plants will flower, making it the first time in North America that 3 corpse flowers have come out at about the same time. Simultaneous flowers are extremely rare because the blooms only happen when the plant has accumulated enough energy in their underground storage organs. To ensure that plants can continue to grow outside their native habitat in the botanical garden and elsewhere, a couple of holes were cut into this flowering plant to harvest the male and female pollen.
These are listed as vulnerable species, and learning how to propagate them in botanic gardens may be one of the ways that we can ensure to have this plant available for many more years to come, because its habitat is threatened in its native Sumatra.
Deborah Block, VOA News, Washington.
You have been listening to International Edition. Find us at voanews.com. Our thanks to Patrice Martin, our director, our engineer, Misha Dubinsky. I'm Ira Melman. Enjoy your day.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
During his recent trip to Colombia, Argentina, Chile, and Panama, Vice President Mike Pence urged governments in the hemisphere to take strong action to support a peaceable solution to the crisis facing the Venezuelan people. In Venezuela, said Vice President Pence, we're seeing the tragedy of tyranny play out before our eyes. The Venezuelan people are experiencing grinding poverty and dire food and medicine shortages. The once free people of Venezuela are being forced to endure this fate by the brutality of the Maduro regime, said Mr. Pence. No free people has ever chosen to walk the path from prosperity to poverty. No free people has ever chosen to turn what was once and should still be one of South America's richest nations into its poorest and most corrupt. The Maduro regime has undermined Venezuela's democratically elected National Assembly. It has stifled the voices of a free press and its people, and imprisoned more than 670 political opponents. More than 130 Venezuelans have already died in the fight for democracy. The United States, Colombia, and free nations of Latin America will not be silent as Venezuela slides into dictatorship, said Vice President Pence. We will continue to stand with free nations across our hemisphere until democracy is restored for the Venezuelan people. Determined to hold Venezuela to account, 12 nations from across the region jointly issued the Lima Declaration. They were blunt and truthful. Venezuela is no longer a democracy. The Maduro regime has committed systematic violations of human rights and fundamental liberties and bears responsibility for blocking the entry into Venezuela of badly needed food supplies and medicine. The United States has issued several rounds of targeted sanctions against Venezuelan government officials, including Maduro. The United States, said Mr. Pence, will continue to take action until the Maduro regime restores democracy, holds free and fair elections, releases all political prisoners, and ends the repression of the Venezuelan people. Working with all of its allies across Latin America, as President Donald Trump has said, we can achieve a peaceable solution to the crisis facing the Venezuelan people. To that end, the U.S. will continue to bring to bear the full measure of American economic and diplomatic power until democracy is restored in Venezuela.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.